Why don't you just sort of, I got to set some levels here. So can you just describe what you're looking at out the window?
I'm looking at, well, it's dark, actually. but if I were looking out the window, I would be looking out at sort of a little forest behind my house where there are lots of birds that fly around and squirrels and that sort of thing.
Have you had a good winter?
Quite a peaceful view. It's been pretty mild.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, not. I don't think it's been as dry as you guys have had, but it's been kind of warm, so there's no snow on the ground.
Oh.
It tends to rain or very wet snow, and then it melts.
Oh.
And so, but the mountains, I mean, other parts of Europe have actually gotten pounded.
Mm-hmm.
The Alps have gotten huge amounts of snow this year, so it's kind of weird.
Well, are you in Bulgaria? Are you, I know I keep asking you about this. I should just look on the map, but are you in the Carpathians or anything? How close are you to the Carpathians?
No. We're down south, like almost, our southern border is with Greece.
Oh.
And Turkey.
Oh.
Okay. And so we're way down south.
Oh, okay.
So there's the Balkan Mountains and the Rhodope Mountains, and there's several mountain ranges in Bulgaria. It's a very mountainous country.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of pretty good skiing and ski areas. But, yeah, it's not where people expect it to be.
Oh, okay.
It's not where I expected it to be before I moved here. It's totally different.
Do you like it?
So,
do you like it there?
Yeah, I like it.
Neat.
Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting that you live in Bulgaria and you're writing about public lands in the American West.
Yeah.
Well, you are, what is your, just why don't you introduce yourself including your position at HCN?
Yeah, my name is Jonathan Thompson, and I am a contributing editor at High Country News and a freelance writer.
Well, you wrote sort of an op-ed a little bit about energy leasing in the American West called The Big Public Land Sellout. And basically, what I'm getting is that you're saying that the upcoming lease sales in the West, including Colorado and New Mexico, are shortcuts to transferring federal lands to private interests. In other words, instead of transferring federal lands to states and then the states selling the land, lease sales skip the middleman, meaning the state. That's what I'm picking up from your article.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's maybe a little bit different than that, but I think what I was trying to point out with that article is that, you know, a lot of people are really worried about this movement and this push to transfer federal lands to states and or to sell federal lands to private interests. And my point was really to say, yeah, you know, that it's great to worry about that, but one of the things that you don't want to lose sight of is the fact that every 3 months, you know, quarterly, there are these oil and gas lease sales, which are almost privatization of public land. It's not full privatization. You're not transferring title to the land. You're not giving the land to some private company, but it's sort of a quasi-privatization, because once these leases are made, once a company has the lease, they have basically private property rights on that land, and they have the right to drill it or to mine it for coal. And then once they do that, you know, they can't necessarily cut off access like they could to private property, but for all practical purposes, you know, once there's a oil well there or a coal mine, you can't use it anymore as the public.
Well,
so for all practical purposes, it's really transferred.
Well, in terms of property rights, I mean, it's really not a property right. I think I disagree with that because even though the energy companies have a right to develop the minerals and they purchase that right, they're developing those minerals on behalf of the American public because they're federal minerals. But that isn't an ownership right. They don't own the land. As you said, there's no transfer of title. And those minerals, are supposed to come back to the American public. Obviously, we pay for those minerals. And then the energy companies also have a responsibility to reclaim that land. They have a responsibility for reclamation. And they don't always do it. But that's the part, too, where, the public comes back into that public land is the responsibility of the energy companies to sort of, put that land back to what it was before they developed the minerals. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, and that's definitely true. And that's why I don't go so far as to say it's complete privatization or that it's as much of a transfer, I guess, as what some people are proposing out there, where it's an actual sale. But first off, I mean, they don't have a private property right, but they do have the right. Once they lease the land, the BLM is fairly hesitant. The BLM basically will not shut down some company from drilling altogether, because when they lease it, they lease it with that idea that they're going to be able to drill it. Like, that's what they're buying when they lease it, is the right to drill it. Of course, it has to fit within federal regulations, and so that drilling does. But right now, what's happening is that the Trump administration is rolling back a lot of those regulations.
Right.
So when that happens, you're basically taking the public say over what happens on that land. You're taking that away from them by taking away those regulations. You're making it easier for these companies to exercise their rights, as they would say, to develop this land. And also, I mean, another thing that the Trump administration has done is it has reopened loopholes on royalties that the Obama administration tried to close, which means that it's easier for companies to get around paying the full royalties to the federal government or to the public, to the taxpayer, for drilling these lands. So when you say it's done on behalf of the public, I mean, I think that's totally true. And the public does get royalties from the oil that's drilled on that land. But when the administration starts to take away regulations and they take away some of the framework that confines these companies and takes away or reopens loopholes that allow them to get away with paying less royalties, then I think that the public is getting much less benefit out of this. And so then you throw into question whether this really is for the public good or not.
Right. And can you talk about what's happening with the National Environmental Protection Act, or NEPA, in terms of the permitting process?
Yeah. So, I mean, NEPA has been the thing that's been in place to basically ensure that oil companies and coal companies and everybody else who develops anything on federal land goes through this process of an environmental impact statement or an environmental assessment to make sure that what they do is not going to have a detrimental effect or too detrimental of an effect on the environment or on endangered species, on habitat, that sort of thing. What the administration now is doing and what the – and I should point out that the Bush administration did this as well, maybe even more so. And what they're trying to do is increase the number of, say, categorical exclusions that they can give.
Right.
And what that means is that the local BLM managers can say they can use a categorical exclusion to allow somebody to drill a well without going through the full NEPA process.
Which, and the full NEPA process for listeners is, that's another way that the public can weigh in on, you know, the lease and what's going to happen on the surface of the land within the lease boundaries.
Correct, yeah. And so the way it's done now is that there's a resource management plan done, usually every 20 years. So a resource management plan would be done for the field office that you're in, the BLM field office that you're in. And so that's, you know, usually that's a fairly large area. And what they do is they sit down and they go through this process. It takes years to do a resource management plan. And that's when they take in all the public comment. That's when they do all the analyses to try to understand what it would look like to do a full field development of that region of oil and gas, for example. And then once that's done, then they can go forward and lease things as long as it fits under the RMP,
right,
resource management plan. And then they can permit drilling under the resource management plan. One of the problems that you run into is that right now, for example, the resource management plan was done, might have been done back in 2003, for example, and it's still in use. But that was before anybody was really going after the oil in shale formations using horizontal drilling and multi-stage hydraulic fracturing,
right,
which is much more intensive. And so that stuff wasn't really considered in these older resource management plans. So what you have going on is this sort of they're approving things under this old resource management plan where they never really considered it. They never really considered this kind of intensive drilling. And so you've got this kind of weird problem. And what the BLM offices do is they say, hey, look, you know, we're going to go ahead and approve this drilling because we had public input 15 years ago, and so you had your chance to do that, and we're not going to listen to much anymore.
Right.
We're just going to approve it. And so that's problematic as well.
Well, there was something else in your article. You mentioned something called EnergyNet, and I went on to EnergyNet to look up some of these leases that are coming up, and, you know, EnergyNet, it's like a firewall. You can't get into EnergyNet unless you're a member, unless you're an energy company that's going to bid on some of these leases. And I'm wondering if EnergyNet, which is the online sort of bidding website, was that a response to Tim DeChristopher's sort of successful bidding attempt to purchase Utah leases as a protest some years ago?
Yeah, in part it was, for sure. It was a response to Tim DeChristopher. It was a response to the protests that have happened since then against leases. When they have these lease sales, they used to have them at the district office or whatever, and it was actually a physical location, which allowed protesters to show up and, you know, protest or maybe disrupt the lease sale. And so they moved them online, and now that really kind of cuts out the public. The public still has a 30-day or a 45-day or a 90-day protest period, depending on the lease. But that's not done in this personal way that it used to be done. You don't have that ability as the public to directly confront the people who are doing the leasing and who are buying the leases like you once did. And so it's relegated to this basically letter writing, the protest period is. And what we found when we looked at lease sales of the past, especially the past year, is that those protests really didn't have much impact on what happened at the lease sales. So they would advertise X amount of leases, maybe, you know, 100,000 acres, let's say, somewhere. In the end, no matter how many protests there were, in the end, they would still auction off the same 100,000 acres.
And that, you say that sort of this, let me see, I'm sorry. At the end of your article, you say that in the San Juan Basin in northern New Mexico, which is a part of the upcoming auction next month, that this is going to be a test sort of whether the BLM will pay attention to the public in terms of honoring some of the protests or some of the comments.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a classic example right there of this whole kind of issue, because that's a case where the resource management plan was done in 2003, and now they're leasing out land under that 2003 resource management plan. That's how they're justifying it. They're saying, look, you know, we went through the public comment period back then. In the meantime, that same field office is doing a resource management plan amendment. They're in the process of it because they have acknowledged that their current resource management plan is out of date, and so they're doing a new one. But while they're doing it, they're still leasing out land, which has really upset a lot of people, including several Native American tribal nations who have joined in the protest. And so there has been at least 400 protests against these particular parcels, which are near Chaco Canyon Cultural National Historic Park. And that's a lot of protests for oil and gas lease. I believe it's unprecedented that there's never been that many for a single lease sale. And so the question is now, are they going to listen to those protests and honor them? Or are they going to just ignore them and go forward with the sale? And we're going to find out very soon, within a month, what they do. And I think, you know, if they ignore them, they are sort of sending a message, which is that the public doesn't really matter and the public doesn't really have a say in these things.
Well, Jonathan Thompson, thanks very much. Let me start over. Jonathan Thompson, contributing editor for High Country News, thanks very much for joining me today and for the work that you do on behalf of public lands. No, that's not what I want to say.
Amy.
Wait, let me do that again. Well, Jonathan Thompson, contributing editor for High Country News, thanks very much for joining me today and for your work and the things that you write about in High Country News. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Amy. My pleasure.
Take care, Johnny Peace. Can I call you that?
Thanks.
Can I call you that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks very much. It's such a pleasure to talk with you.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.